C to A. Number 20, B.
We know from our own study something that I think every student is thinking about and questioning constantly. Everyone, a subject that is difficult for any student, and that's the term idea, the meaning, what is idea. And Mrs. Eddy builds fundamentally her whole teaching on principle, God, and its ideas. That's the principle of being, and being itself, small b, the realm of being, is a realm of ideas. So that really these two terms, principle and idea, are important for understanding Christian Science. And to understand what idea means is always difficult, because we are not trained through our life, through our education, through what we hear and read constantly, year in and year out. We never really are hearing anything or seeing anything, learning anything about what is actually idea in the purest sense. Naturally, literature uses and common language uses the term idea, but we know that we use it wrongly. But we say, well, that was a really bad idea. Huh? Well, then we say that, we use the term idea, but we use it not in the way that Christian Science uses it. And because our common use is not the same as in science, I don't want to say that the common use is false. It just is a common use, and if it's a common use, well, it belongs to the language. And so it isn't false that we say, well, that's a bad idea, because in common language, idea means something else than what we know as idea. And so to define to ourselves idea is very difficult. And to see that only that which the divine mind has in view, only that which the divine mind knows is of the nature of idea, is something that has to be built up in the student's consciousness step by step by step. And one has to give oneself years and years of thinking about it until that concept becomes natural to us, that it is not just something that we can think rightly about it, but that it becomes a conscious, constant, inward attitude. That needs really a little bit of culture. Not only a little bit, it needs quite a culture. So what Mrs. Eddy had in view was, how can I lead that which is good in human nature, like desire in prayer, how can I lead that slowly to seeing what is idea? And that actually only ideas as God ideas are constituting reality. And I feel that we are now on page 45, where this great concept of man as idea comes in, that Mrs. Eddy has used 45 pages slowly, only for one point, just to show the promise of it, just to show the possibility of it. She says the possible at one moment. She not only says, not yet says, that this is the facts in being, that she will only show when we take the fourth chapter of Christian Science versus Spiritualism. Actually, from now on again, she drops the term idea, and the whole third chapter does not know really the term idea either. Can you see there are three chapters which Mrs. Eddy presents to the best of the human consciousness and says, what I want to do is to purify the human attitude with bringing in more divine qualities, more divine qualities, until finally one begins to realize these divine qualities are actually God's own ideas. And then we make the step into the realm of science. That's why the fourth chapter is the word as science, because there, for the first time, we touch then really the universe of ideas. This is here showing really only that atonement and Eucharist gives us the way how step by step we can overcome in the human that which is not divine in the human, until we say now, what is then finally reality? And to say that you are one with the idea man, or another term, that you are nothing but idea. That man is nothing but idea, the idea of God. So here and there, love is always that which shows us the end product, which gives us the promise of what will be achieved. And so from time to time, Mrs. Eddy brings in the further view, so to say, the final view, the point omega to which we are driving, and just to encourage us and say, don't lose hope and faith. It will, through that revelation, it will bring us to the point of at one moment with the idea man, and it is possible, and if you go on the way, you will experience it and you will be it. So in the latter chapters, like the 9th and 10th chapter and so on, from there on, you really get the sense that man is but idea, and there is no more a question, is it possible or is it not possible? It is just idea then. Can you see that also those chapters are a way of life? That's why I used that my book, The Structure of the Christian Science Textbook, I made a little subtitle, The Way of Life, because I felt this is not just a theory, it's the most practical thing that you can think of. That textbook does not contain just the principle or the theory. It contains the practice of it, because in a science you have this enormous new point that science is the principle of a subject, but at the same time the method. The method to arrive at that principle. The method must be science too. And therefore it's a practical book. The textbook is not just a theory, and that next to the textbook we must have another text that gives us the practice of it. It contains the deepest practice we can think of. A really scientific, principled practice. Yes, so this is the introduction just to that tone that says, well, it will bring us and elevate us to the at-one-ment with the idea man and his divine principle love. Do you sometimes, when you work in science, and I think you do that every day, conscientiously, do you sometimes make aware what it means that man is idea? Just idea. Now an idea has not the body, an idea has not the person, an idea has no organism, idea has no material concomitant, an idea is just pure God's idea. And have you ever cultured that sense, sitting way back and say, am I really aware what I am trying to achieve with the study of Christian Science? Am I aware that the end product must be that I realize that man is only idea, that he is not a corporeal being that has to be healed, that has to be constantly support the bi-spiritual qualities and so on, do you sometimes look into you and say, is that really my aim? Or is it my aim that my human life, with my human body, with my personality, with my family, and with my business, that is that which I want to bring into harmony, and that's the purpose of Christian Science? These are two very different questions. If the inner desire or the inner attitude is constantly directed towards our own person and our body, directed to that phenomena that lasts about 70 or 80 years, then we are misguided. That's not Christian Science. Christian Science is to take that as a beginning and say, that has to be saved, that has to be transformed. That's the sinner. That concept that we constantly think that we have to polish up our person, our body, our family, our business, polish that up, that is the purpose why I study Christian Science, then I think we should drop Christian Science. Or we get into an awful trouble. Because it is not the aim of Christian Science. Mrs. Edith shows that so neatly, I think. You know? How is it usually when we introduce Christian Science to somebody? How is it that we say, look here, dear, you know God is principle and God is love. And you know God only knows ideas. Yeah? It's true. But the one who says it doesn't believe it. He doesn't believe it. Because he believes, no, the purpose of Christian Science is that you take those ideas and use them for really establishing a better mortal. So these are great questions, you see. And I feel if one really studies the textbook in its line of development, really as a way of life, then Mrs. Eddy leaves us first in that belief, so to say, that we are mortal and that we are perhaps a nice human being, and that she appeals now to the best in that nice human being in prayer and says, see that you really use and mobilize the best qualities in you, as your human being. But then she goes on and says, you know, that's nice, but Atonement Eucharist says that divinity must overcome humanity, the human, at every point. And so she wakes us up and shakes us up with the second chapter. That's why that second chapter is so shaking and therefore is not easy always to digest. And says, look here, that must be overcome. But naturally then thought says, well, what is then left? If the divine is overcoming the human at every point, I have no more human left. What then? Is there then just emptiness or what? And so she indicates and says, no, you know, that brings you to one point, that you begin to see that the human and the material and the corporeal is not man, that man is but idea. But to introduce that very gently, you see, very gently, the real beginning of the treatment of that subject of idea is on page 70-71. She uses 70 pages out of 600 pages. Well, how much is that? You see, nearly an eighth. She uses only to introduce really what she wants to present, namely idea. She uses three chapters, you see, just as a way to enter into the holiest of holiest, into enter into the realm of ideas. And on that way of 70 pages, only here and there she lets a little ray of light come into the human and says, this is your promise. This is your promise. Hope and faith will be freed. The stone will be rolled away from hope and faith. And what you see then is idea. Man as idea. Can you see that? See, these are the big things we learn from proper text interpretation, from scientific text interpretation, where we do not interpret just every sentence, but where we regard every statement within the whole. And only then really things are being revealed that are of great significance, like here, with the tone of man as idea. So we go and see how now Mrs. Eddy presents what happened when that stone is rolled away from the grave first, and that hope and faith that was there in the students was now being elevated gently to the point of idea. We see now what happened after the crucifixion, and there, little by little, touch by touch, just faint touches, she shows how the students then were roused out of hope and faith, just to some kind of a little touch that Jesus represents an idea, that he was the highest human corporeal concept of what? Not of a mortal, but of idea, man. So we read here and come to the first subtone as mind. Now you may be helped either with that matrix 2 or, no, matrix 3 you have, or perhaps just as well with page 6 of the epitomes. And you see here, if we just have first a quick look at page 6, we see that the top epitome is love, naturally, as truth. So truth is the subtone of love, which says that through man's unity with love, we become aware of our oneness with the spiritual idea of man and his divine principle, love. This subject runs over about 8 to 9 pages, and is built up in the Genesis order. The Genesis order is what? It's the order of the days of creation. The days of creation have 7 days, and each day has subtones, but not always 7 subtones, as we know from the chapter creation, but that the first day as mind has 3 subtones, then the second day as spirit has 3 subtones, the third has 5 subtones, then the fourth principle has 5 subtones, life has 4 subtones, truth then has the whole 7 subtones, and love has either 2 or 7 subtones. In Genesis, it's reduced to 2 subtones. I cannot go into the subject why there are such irregular numbers of subtones in the days. I have done that in the chapter Genesis at the summer school. I have done that very explicitly. I've taken quite a lot of time. It would be a pity if we just would repeat that again. Those who are not familiar with it can go back to the summer school and just study those particular cassettes out of that thing, which is very important because it shows what fundamentally the Genesis order does not show the numerals of infinity. They are 2 different things, as you remember. The days of creation always have within themselves a developing time sense, a genesis, something that is becoming, that is coming into being. So it has a time sense in it, it has a time developing sense in it. You live through these days of creation. Sometimes it takes years for mind as mind, years for mind as spirit to realize that. So that this order with the 3, 3, 5, 5, 4, 7, 2 subtones is called the Genesis subtones, and always represents the minimum of tonality that is necessary to be able to go to the next main tone. It's always the minimum necessary, what is a minimum necessary of understanding mind, that we have a secure basis to understand then spirit or the second day. The second day giving 3 subtones, which is the minimum, so that we are on secure ground to touch the third day of creation, and so on. Whereas the numerals of infinity are the fundamental of science. The days of creation are the becoming sense. The numerals of infinity are the isness sense, with no time development in it. Just as in mathematics, we don't have a becoming element in it. In mathematics, everything is what it is. 2 and 2 do not become 4. They are 4. That's the difference. If I think that 2 and 2 after a while become 4, I would have a Genesis sense. But if I say that since time immemorial 2 and 2 were always 4, they had never been to be created to be 4, can you hear the tone of it? Then we touch the numerals of infinity, and when we consider a subject from the point of view of numerals of infinity, naturally, we can take every subject in the 7, because it's the whole of it, the maximum of it. So the days of creation always give you the minimum of subtones. The numerals of infinity give us the maximum, the whole of a tone. This is all what I want to say right now. I have to refer to a deeper study to the earlier presentations. Only so that you are not irritated by seeing that the number of the subtones change constantly. It represents, as I said, the days of creation structure. So we have mind first in the 3 subtones, as in Genesis. The main tone, I have to be careful. Now we have always 4 tones at once. We really get now good musicians and good composers. We begin now to listen at once to love as the main tone, truth as the subtone, then as mind as the subtone, which has again mind, spirit and soul as subtones. Actually, one begins to hear very naturally the flow of it and the music of it, so to say, the symphony of it. But the point is that naturally we have to culture ourselves to analyze and distinguish this hierarchy. So is that what I call a hierarchy, or is that what science always calls a hierarchy? Biology has a hierarchy, like the hierarchy first of the electrons, then the atoms, then it goes into biology and says these can constitute a molecule, and then molecules can constitute a cell, And so the hierarchy goes up and up. The cells then constitute an organ. The organs then constitute a body. And the body then constitute, now we come in another realm, a society. Can you see, it's a great hierarchy which shows that in the society we could more or less say consists of electrons, but that is a translation right down through the whole levels of hierarchy in order to see the place value of each one. So can you see that we have to culture ourselves into that sense of having a hierarchical structure of consciousness, where we know what is the main tone and what is just a little bit the sub tone, so that we are not irritated and take the sub tone as the main tone. If we don't have a hierarchical consciousness, we misrepresent that and take the fourth little sub tone as the main tone, and the whole picture is defaced, absolutely defaced. We give not to each hierarchical order the right place value. And then if we do that, and that we have done in the pre-Dorley period, we have just been reading the text and given to every word in the text the same hierarchy, the same importance. We never really believed that something is of a higher importance or a higher hierarchy than something else, because we are so deeply impressed that the book was written by God, and by golly, if God writes something, everything is important. Yeah, it is important, but we have to see the music of it. Just as in a symphony, even the triangle is important. Huh? Even the triangle. That has to be played rightly. But only with a triangle you cannot make a symphony. I guess. I don't know more about that. So the symphony really makes only proper sense and gives really good interpretation if one sees what in that which instrument in that symphony has a leading office, what supports that leading office, and so on. I'm talking about something which I don't understand in music, but I understand it in metaphysics. But I think music may represent the harmony of being in a wonderful way, just with other symbols. Yes. Isn't it so, Mike? Huh? Would you agree a little bit without really... Yes. So, we make a break here, and afterwards we start listening to that symphony.